So Nate said, absolutely, that sounds really cool. And then this was when Nate and Paul were traveling together. I was like, Nate, will you just ask Paul if I can do one of him also?
Naturally.
And he's like, oh yeah, he says fine, don't worry about it, just go ahead and do it. I was like, okay, I'm on to something now.
Welcome to Patent Pending, a show about the future of disc golf. I'm Jesse from Trash Panda, and on the show today, how an idea at the happiest place on earth changed almost every bag in our sport. I'm just gonna say it. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy this episode if you're at least one of three people. First, maybe you're someone who creates. You're an artist, a designer, a problem solver. Second, maybe you're someone who builds. It could be companies, products, tools, you name it. And third, maybe you're someone who innovates. A new product, a path to a new future, a new niche within a community. If you identify with one or all of those characteristics, then this episode is for you. Because Nina Everson, the founder of Disc Golf Pins, is all three. A creator, a builder, an innovator. And as is true for most of us who feel the same, it started well before Disc Golf Pins was even an idea.
I have three brothers, so I would do stuff by myself because I was the only girl, you know, so I would draw and stuff like that. And I would make stuff and make cards and all kinds of stuff, you know, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with college. And, you know, because apparently everybody would have to go to college for whatever reason. And so through high school, I did take some art classes and stuff, but all of my advisors are like, you will never make money in art. Do not do that. Never, you know? And so yes. I was like, okay, well, what else do I even possibly like? And so I had a really, really good biology teacher. So going into college, I'm like, I'm going to be a biologist. I wanted to do animal behavior. And then, which was fine. You know, I got through, I think, my first semester or something. And then I met my husband and his girlfriend at the time, and they were both doing graphic design. And I was like, damn, that's cool. That's really cool. I, you know, it wasn't anything offered in my high school. My high school is in the middle of nowhere. Like, we had a typing class, and that was the extent of our computers. And so I kind of looked at what they were doing, and I was like, okay, I gotta change this up. I gotta do something else, you know.
Was Adobe a thing at that point? Were you able to dabble in anything like that? Do you remember like your first time on Photoshop or Illustrator? Like,
yeah, I was like, what is this magic? What is happening right now? You know, because you never really like, you know, now everybody has, you know, everything that, and I'm making myself sound like a really old person, but, you know, you see it and you're like, why, how are you doing this? You know, the professor is doing some stuff and up on the board or on the, you know, projector or whatever. And like, I'm just like, this, I can't even fathom what you are doing right now. And, you know, you don't really think about every shirt has a designer behind it. Every can of Coke, you know, has somebody working, you know, 100 hours to make sure the sea looks okay, you know? And it's just, you know, when I started to explain to, like, I was trying to convince my parents that like art was an okay thing to go into. And that was one of the things I really had to show them. I took a menu, a Coke can, t-shirt, stuff like that. And I was like, listen, these are the things every single company in the whole world needs a designer to help them present their brand. And it's just like, they're like, oh, okay, you'll be fine. Just go ahead. You know,
sounds like that was your first endeavor in an elevator pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like gearing you up. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely was. And I was going to do it anyway, obviously, but you know, it was nice to have my parents like, okay, yeah, I get it now. And you're going to do really good at it. So just go ahead.
So you get into graphic design, start to study that. And then what about your relationship with like just the idea of being an entrepreneur growing up or like starting your own company? I believe before Disc Golf Pins, you had a t-shirt company.
I did.
Was,
Yeah.
Were there roots in that in your life growing up that you kind of see this through line, or was that newfound later in life?
So my dad owns his own business, and it was my grandfather's business before that. So I think, and you know, I was always afraid to do it because I just saw their hardships, I guess. You know, obviously there was a lot of really good stuff that came out of, you know, working for yourself, but yeah. You know, my dad worked 6 days a week and I barely saw him when I was younger. And it was like, I don't want that for myself. I want a paycheck. I want to work this hour to this hour, and I want security and like all those buzzwords that everybody always tells you that this is what your future should always look like. And then, you know, as I got older, I, you know, in college, I started the t-shirt business, and I'm like, oh, okay, I can create something that somebody else wants to buy from me. I can use my two hands, screen print something, take it to a shop and have somebody buy it and wear it. And it's just like, whoa, okay, that feels really, really good. Like, let's continue down this path.
What were those shirts? What were the, like, oh, what was there a design style? Was there a story behind a brand or something?
It was so ridiculous. So just really, really kind of artistic stuff. And then I remember one was really silly, and it was like when the shirts were really cool and they had like down the side or, you know, up the side of the back or whatever. And like, and then there was one that had like, it was like a bloody handprint coming down the shoulder. And it was just like, I have one of almost every single shirt that I've made before. And just for, you know, myself. And you know, I look at them sometimes like, what was I doing? But people were buying them. It was cool then, you know, but I was doing it in the living room of my rental home as, you know, a freshman and in college, you know, and I was also working 35 hours a week, going to school full time. Mm-hmm. And then I started this little business on the side also. So like, I don't know, apparently I just like to work a lot and stay busy. So.
Yeah. It's like growing up, you had this, or towards college, you had this idea where you're like, I want consistency. I want security. I want to be able to expect how my week is going to look. And then you decided to just like 180 degree, go run in the opposite direction.
Yeah. And it was crazy.
I believe all of these things kind of converge at the happiest place on earth, right? An idea comes at Disney. Yes. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So probably about 2015, Alan and I, my husband and I, were, I don't know, 2014 maybe. Anyway, we were at this local, so this is going back a little bit from that. I don't remember even where we were, but we had bought a couple of discs. We got super bored living in Wilmington because we didn't know anybody. We didn't know, I don't know. It was just like, let's do something. And previously to this, in college, we had played disc golf. And just, you know, a few times a year or whatever. So we saw disc golf discs. So we're like, let's get a couple, let's go out and have fun. So we started playing, and we started playing more and more. And then 2016, we were in Pasadena for my friend's wedding. And so Disneyland, we're just like, I was buying Disney pins, and I was like, I wonder if there's disc golf pins, you know? And Alan's like, I kind of doubt it. That doesn't seem like something somebody would ever want, you know? And I was like, okay,
well. You know, you're onto a good idea when someone says, that doesn't sound like anything anyone would want. It's like, okay, we're on the right track. Let's go that way.
Yeah, let's keep going. Okay. And because at this point, I was working, you know, 60 hours a week. And I actually had another small business.
Okay.
Also, not the t-shirt business, but another small business on the side too. And like, I think he was trying to just tell me to not take on any more. So anyway, So anyway, so I was Googling like disc golf pins, and nothing was really coming up, like maybe one little thing. And so I was like, okay, this could be cool, but I'm just going to do it. It's going to cost me $10. So I'm going to register the domain, and then I'll think about it when I get home. And so the next week I started building out the website. I had no idea what even the pins were going to look like, what I was even
doing.
Between
Disney and getting home to start designing the website, could you just not get it out of your head?
No, I couldn't. I was like, what's the header going to look like? What would I even put there? Like, I don't have anything to show. So I guess it's going to have to be Photoshopped. And then, and then I think I just took some photos of some baskets or something. And I'm like, I don't even know what this is even going to look like. But, and then, yeah, the Seinfeld pin was the first pin I did, because it was the first thing I could relate that other people could relate to, that was also not generic enough, but like, yeah. So that I was like, I'm just going to see what it looks like. I'm not going to like borrow money or anything. So my other side business, I took money from that and put it into this pin business. And okay. I was like, I'm going to sell them, try to sell them. And then when I get enough money, I'll make another pin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it took me 2 years to find a good manufacturer to make these pins for me. Just so much research, so much just samples and making sure everything is ethical and make sure, all of that stuff. And it, making sure the quality was there, and a lot of it's not, and
I was going to say that must be 2 years of bad samples, just over and over.
It wasn't great. And a lot of it was just like, it's cheap and it's light and it's thin, or the stuff or the enamel falls out after 4 months or something. So I put them on my bag. I'd try them out. I'd play 50 rounds with them on my bag. And like, the first round of the Seinfeld pins were fine, and then, I would switch up manufacturers, try something else. And then there was the process of teaching people they needed pins on their bags.
Interesting.
Which is an impossible task, I feel like. Not impossible, because obviously I did it, but like, you really have to show people that it's cool to have a disc golf pin on.
Talk about
bag.
That, because this is also the convergence of like, I remember probably, I don't remember exactly when like Grip EQ came on the scene, but I know that, growing up, it was all satchel bags. It was all the like Innova side strap. I used that for like 10 years. And then people started to get a bag that they cared about. You had Pound and these companies that were making these nice bags. And I can totally see a correlation where like stickers on water bottles, you don't have to teach someone that. That's just like a thing in our culture to some extent. What was it like teaching pins on bags? Can you go there? Can you take us there?
Well, it was about the same time, I think, when I started playing disc golf, like you didn't get a backpack disc golf bag unless you were really good at disc golf. Like I remember having a conversation with lots of people, 2015, it was like, you wear that side strap bag until you're good enough.
And then you like upgrade to the backpack straps for that, that bag. It's not even a backpack at that point. Yeah.
No. And no, everybody carries backpack because obviously it makes more sense for your posture and carrying and the load, and it looks cooler too. So, it was just really about putting pins on bags, giving people pins, making them post photos of them. The real thing that got me pretty good traction was doing event pins. So, at one event, I could, supply the event with 100 pins. So those 100 people put pins on their bags, and then they could be from, Charlotte or whatever. And so when I would do this in Wilmington, those people in Charlotte, they would go home and then they would have pins on their bags. So other people would be like, wait a minute, where'd you get that Seinfeld pin? And then also the big thing too was, so I played an event. It was a McBeast challenge. Do you remember when Paul Macbeth and Nate Sexton were doing that?
Yep.
Okay. So I kind of, at one of those events, there was like five ladies there, including Nate Sexton's wife. So I had talked to her a little bit, and like, she was there with her dog, and I don't remember if Cora was born yet. No, she wasn't. Anyway, so it was just Bree and her dog. And so we made a conversation and stuff. And I started, before this, I had kind of thought about doing player pins, because Nate and Paul were anybody talked about,
Course.
So I was like, I wonder if Nate Sexton would let me do a player pin. And that, kind of was a scary, nervous thing. Because who am I? You know, I'm some random person that wants to make a pin of this, you know, pro disc golfer who's just like, I am starstruck when I even see him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then so I was talking to his wife and I was like, do you think like Nate would maybe want to, you know, do a pin and like I just design it and I can sell it and I'll send him money for each sale?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll tell him, don't worry about it. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then so she hooked me up with Nate, and so Nate said absolutely, that sounds really cool. And then this was when Nate and Paul were traveling together. I was like, Nate, will you just ask Paul if I can do one of him also?
Naturally.
And he's like, oh yeah, he says fine, don't worry about it, just go ahead and do it. I was like, okay, I'm on to something now. Yeah. You know, and when I had set up the website, I had the Seinfeld pin up there, and within a day I had my first sale, and I'm like, oh my god, this is so cool, you know. And then I did the Nate pin and the Paul pin, and those started selling. And still, like at this time, I was still working. I worked for a children's entertainment company, and that was a super demanding job. I was working 60 hours a week, you know. And so I did disc golf pins and that for 2 years.
Wow.
And so I was working, I don't even want to talk about how much, you know, like Alan would physically have to come at 1 a.m. and take my computer away from me so I would go to sleep, because I'd get up at 6:30 the next morning, start working until I had to be at work at 8:00. And then as soon as I got home, I would work on disc golf pins, and there was no work-life balance whatsoever. It was work always.
Was that exhausting or was that exhilarating?
It was exhilarating. Yeah. It was like, it was insane. My job, my real job was, very, very demanding. And it just got to the point where I just wasn't enjoying it anymore, you know? Hmm. And so, but it was what paid was making bills. Money and paying bills and stuff like that. And, you know, Alan's a graphic designer too, so he could help me with disc golf pins where he could, but I was still, it was a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But yeah. And then, so after 2 years of that, the children's entertainment company, they just downsized and mostly just got rid of the whole company. I think they're still trying to sell it or something, but, you know, so that was a really big relief for me actually, because it was one of those things. It was like, when I started there, it was a startup, and it was like, okay, well, you know, when we sell, you're going to get this much out of it and all this stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stick it out until something happens with this thing. I gotta, you know, I put my time in. So I was there for 10 years.
Wow.
And then it was like, okay, peace out. See you later, guys. Like y'all are fired, and you know, then nothing, you know? So it was just like, okay, game on. I'm going to do my own thing. I will never do that ever again.
So with the control back in her hands, Nina went all in on disc golf pins. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Nina Everson. Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. Disc golf content is what Jomez Pro does best, and in large part, it's due to the support from fans like you. So this season, as a patent pending listener, you can save 20% on your next purchase from the Jomez Pro store by using the code PATPEND20 at checkout. That's all caps, PATPEND, and the number 20. This code will be live for all of 2023, can only be used once per customer, and can't be combined with any other coupon codes or used to purchase gift cards. So consider helping support the show today while saving big at jomezpro.com with code PATPEN20. We truly appreciate your support. Welcome back to the show. So Nina Everson is all in on disc golf pins, but there are a couple of major speed bumps looming on the horizon. Like, how can she find a manufacturer she trusts to create enamel pins with quality and care? Or how will she teach the rest of us that we want or even need pins? And how can she create a business that sustains her creativity? In the second half of our conversation, Nina shares stories and advice that can only come from the trenches, and she explores ideas that she's still processing in real time. This second half is a goldmine, and genuinely just speaking as myself here, I am still thinking about some of the things she said weeks later. So let's jump right back in with maybe the biggest speed bump of all, manufacturing.
So at my graphic design job that I was at, I did a lot of that. I sourced things and I had a lot of communication with manufacturers, and a lot of it was book printing and stuff like that. So it was about checking proofs and making sure everything was okay, making sure the quality was all right, you know. So it was a lot of back and forth. So you know, it's really about doing the research, and you can do it. I mean, you know, it's so overwhelming and intimidating. It's like, wait, I'm going to email somebody in another country that doesn't probably speak English, and then they're going to get me something, and like, I'm supposed to trust them and send them money. Like, I'm not okay with that. But then you get okay with it because there isn't.
Let alone the minimums are often at a number where it's like, I'm going to do all of that while ordering 500 or something.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, there goes all of my money is going someplace else. And then I gotta hope in 2 months, somebody is going to send me something that looks okay, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, the first few times, like I did that for my other job, it was like, I'm sending somebody else's money, so I don't, you know, it's fine. Yeah. But then as soon as you send your own money, you're like, oh, okay, well, this is much more scary at this point. But so it was, you know, it's just about doing the research and just having the, I guess, just to be brave and just do it. You know, if you have an idea for something, do the research, email people, ask questions. It's super time consuming, but if you have the time and you have a product that you really strongly think that is going to be beneficial, like, and people will like, it's worth the effort for sure.
You mentioned the early pins. If I had two people side by side who had a bag, who had a Frolf Jerry pin on it, and one of them was one of those early runs and one wasn't, like one was the newer, just by looking at it, can you tell? Do you know?
I think at this point, because it would have been, especially if they had it on their bag for any amount of time. I've seen pictures of the older ones, just and
wear and tear.
They did not hold up for great. if anybody has had one of those and they email me, I immediately replace it because, you know, that was a learning experience for me, and you know, I'm happy to do it. So yeah.
Of course. I believe you have said that it to do the state pins, 50 states, it took you about 2 years trying to choose colors, make sure you weren't aligning yourself with certain sports teams and things like that. Can you talk about that process?
It was a process. Oh my God. So I started with Texas and California because I thought, you know, those are people know what their flags look like and what, you know, so I went that way. I mostly started with flags.
Obvious.
So like it was, it was easier. It was what people had done in the past for state pins and stuff like that. And I really wanted to, I don't know, make sure Like I wasn't hitting any sports, anything that was going to give people a reason to come at me, you know? And,
even legal concerns with certain, brand, like, team colors or something, I can imagine.
I didn't know what I was getting myself into doing, starting the Texas and California. I don't even know if I had even intentions to do all 50. I think I was like, let's just put these out here. Those are big disc golf states, you know? And then I think I went to North Carolina, which also worked out really good for the state flag.
Yeah.
So those were the meccas that I was aware of at that point that were really going to hit it. And then I would get emails like, why didn't you do Minnesota, and then four page descriptions of why I should do a pin for them. I'm like, okay, I'm getting to it, you know? And yeah, yeah, so it was a lot of research. It was, you know, what is Indiana known for? What is Idaho known for? And then, you know, for Idaho, it was like, I know what, like, from being from Ohio, Idaho is potatoes, you know? So yeah, like, I don't know, you know? And so I put it out on social media and I was like, potatoes question mark or something like that. And everybody's like, no, please do not do that. Do our cotton candy skies, do our, you know, do this stuff. I was like, oh, okay. Cause I don't know.
It reminds me of the, like, growing up in elementary school, I want to say I had like a state project or something.
Yeah.
You could have just attended an elementary school on the day that they're like presenting their state projects and gotten all your research done for you.
I would have known. It wouldn't have taken me 2 years, you know? but a lot of it too was the financial investment, you know?
Absolutely.
I had to stock at least 100 of each state. And that is so expensive, you know? It's just like, am I going to sell 100 Mississippi pins this year? No, I'm not. I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe Mississippi is insane for disc golf. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on down there, you know? And then, so that was more, I think, you know, I had some of the designs made and then I just like would stack them so like I could make that investment and then really push them out there and hope somebody would buy them. Like I had this one guy, I can't even remember what state it was at this point, but he would email me and message me every time I would post a new state. I'm just gonna say Mississippi. Why isn't Mississippi up there? Where's Mississippi? Every single time. So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna do Mississippi.
To get him off my back. Yep.
Yeah. This guy never purchased the Mississippi pin because I don't know why. So I messaged him.
This is the story of like entrepreneurs. Like everyone has their version of that guy and that detail. Oh man.
Yeah. So I'd email him. Hey, I had noticed you haven't bought one yet. Here's the link again. I only did it twice or something, but in my mind, I should have emailed him every single day, just like he was doing to me until he bought one.
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Which I appreciate, obviously. Like, I can't take offense to that because it's something somebody wants that I've made, again, that they can put on their bag that they want so bad that I can provide for them. And I can't be mad at that. Yeah. I love it. I mean, that guy was a little excessive. But it's like, it just, you know, to this day, I get orders. They pop up on my phone. I look at every single one of them because I get excited that somebody wants the thing that I made. And I have a platform to put it out to people. And it's just so cool. It's so cool. And I pack every single order myself. And, you know, so I see that come in. I put it all together. The mail lady comes and picks it up. You know, it's just like,
there you go.
Yeah. It's such a rewarding process for sure.
Whether you or I like the term entrepreneur.
Sure.
It does fit what we do.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if I may do a new entirely selfish segment where I just ask you some questions about how you handle some things as an entrepreneur
so that I can
learn.
Yes.
And if someone else learns, great, but I'm genuinely curious. I'll start with this one.
Okay.
The disc golf pins seems like such a wonderful outlet for you to be creative as a graphic designer, as someone who is artistic. But at the same time, you're running a business, right? And so you can get totally bogged down in the day-to-day details. Mm-hmm. How do you maintain creativity as an entrepreneur?
You know, I was just thinking about this yesterday, actually, because I had to sit down. I had to really focus on being creative. And it's like, it's such a hard thing. It's not like you can just turn it on and do your job and do this thing. It's not like an assembly line where, yeah, okay, just do this for 2 hours and then you're done. It's like, I have to mentally prepare for it. I think about it for days and then I, you know, maybe I'll sketch some stuff and then try to really force myself into that creative mindset to do the things. But then you're always on the back of your mind. It's like, I got orders to do. I got emails to do. What's with that custom order? You know? So I kind of have to like shut my email off, turn everything off. I always have a show or something on though when I am trying to be creative, and that way it's like I'm not hyper focused on, I don't know, it's something about the distraction, I guess, of having the television on at the same time. It kind of like makes my brain I don't know what it is. It's like, I don't know.
Your brain is too occupied thinking about that show. It can't think about the emails you need to send and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about that, and you're thinking about the task at hand. On that same note, how do you rest as an entrepreneur?
I don't know. My main thing is I will work at night. I'll do stuff during the day and then I'll work at night. And that is one of the things. And it's fine. Like, I work while I watch TV and I sit on the couch and I have my laptop and I can do the emails, you know, pick colors for a custom order or whatever. And that works really good for me, but it still leaves me the ability. Like, you know, this afternoon, my brother just texted me. He's like, "Can we go to Cedar Point?" I was like, "Yeah, of course. I'll see you in a couple hours," or whatever, you know? And it's just, I have that freedom. I can go do that, you know? And then I still have to make up the time, but it's also like, it's super awesome that I can do that.
As much as I would like to say that disc golf is for everyone and a perfectly welcoming place, I know you have your own stories and examples in life of how being a woman playing disc golf has, like, a doubles partner literally just leaving the course as soon as he was randomly paired with you. What do you find as far as business, like, are there correlations for you in being a woman entrepreneur?
I think it is scary for women, especially in the social media aspect of it. Like, I'm sure you saw on like my social media page, like, I don't post pictures of myself because it's a scary thing as a woman to put myself on video and put it on the internet. And I know it's like this day and age, it shouldn't be, but I don't want to be judged. I don't know. I don't want to be judged when I'm just selling a product, I guess, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't want people to see me and think, oh, I want to buy her stuff because of the way she looks, or I don't want to buy stuff because of the way she looks. So, and I know people maybe don't think that, but that's kind of how it feels. Like, I have a lot of women friends who do a lot of social media and they post a lot of videos of themselves and like the screenshots of the things that they get sent. I'm like, I don't want any part of that. You know, it's a scary, scary world. And so, but in person, like when we go vending, like, you know, it'll be my husband and I standing there and like, they'll start asking him questions. And I'm like, and he immediately defers to me. He's like, no, it's her business, you know? And so it's super nice. And they're like, oh, you know, and they think it's really, really cool. So it's almost an advantage in that aspect. It's like, wait a minute, like, this lady's built this company and it's like, you know, a lot of people know who I am, not me personally, but know Disc Golf Pins, you know, and it's just this brand that is out there. And I know I could get a lot more traction if I did have a face behind the company, but I think we talked about this a little bit, but I'm a little bit of an introvert, so it's just like a scary thing for me also. So,
and you don't have to. I mean, if you like napping, you know yourself. Create an environment where you can be yourself.
I think what a
lesson. And I'm definitely gonna spend the rest of today probably thinking about that one, of just, you know, how am I trying to morph into something that maybe I think is expected of me, or I think would help the business, that might actually be pushing me in a direction that's just not me. And thus, if it would lead to more sales but it's not me, doesn't matter. It's not worth it, right?
It never is either. It's like, you have to do what you feel is right for yourself, unless your goal is to eventually sell off the company and you don't want it to be yours anymore and you're just building it for somebody else, basically. But otherwise, like, if you want the long haul, I feel like you really need to, like you're saying, build it to where you're comfortable. I don't know.
So. Yeah. If you had a platform to speak to anyone who was like thinking about starting their own business, men, women, kids, students, whoever, who has an idea, who has this moment in a gift shop at Disneyland where they're like, this could be really cool. And they have no idea what's around the corner. Or maybe they've started the process and they're in the place of, you know, sample after sample after sample of bad enamel pin. If someone's in an idea phase or has something that they've wanted to pursue, if you had that platform, what would you say to them?
So here's the thing. It's a lot of work. If you're not ready for that work yet, it's okay. It's all right, you know, but if you are, full steam ahead, always, always just go for it and just keep working. Take one thing at a time. I have this note on my computer. It says one thing at a time because that's all we've got, you know, and I have to remind myself of that every single day, one thing at a time. And you, these baby steps will take you somewhere if that's where you want to go. And sometimes like with disc golf pins, most of my business is custom orders. That was not the intention at all, you know, but it did lead me there, and it's awesome and it's super fun and I absolutely love it. So sometimes it, you know, creates this other thing that you weren't expecting.
That's Nina Everson, disc golfer, serial entrepreneur, and founder of Disc Golf Pins. You can find out more about what she's working on at discgolfpins.com or on Instagram at discgolfpins. But before I let her go, I had to ask one especially scientific question. And yes, the word scientific there was in quotes. Do you have any data to correlate the people's love for pins versus their play in that tournament? Like if they play well versus if they play poorly and whether the pin goes on the bag or not. Yeah. Is there a correlation there?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Especially like playing locally here. Like I'll see some pins on a bag and I'm like, oh yeah, I did that one or whatever. And they're just like, oh yeah, I won that, or I got second place or something like that. A lot of times it was, oh, that was my first tournament. And so it's like, so heartwarming to me. It's like, I don't know. It just like honestly brings a smile to my face when I see it.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. Patent Pending is presented by Jomez Pro, and you can subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you want to follow us on Instagram for more consistent updates, we are at Patent Pending Show. And if you want to contact the team, our email address is patentpendingshow@jomezpro.com. This episode was produced by Andy Padula with music composed by Starframe. I'm Jesse from Trash Panda, and you've been listening to Patent Pending.